Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Angela Hirsch. She's executive director of the Rape and Abuse Crisis Service, or RACS. Hello, how are you?
I'm great, Gary. How are you?
Doing well. So we're here to talk about a subject called Denim Day, but before we do that, why don't you share what RACS is and the services it provides for those who may not know?
I would be happy to. First of all, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So RACS is a nonprofit organization based here in Jefferson City. Mm-hmm. We serve survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, human trafficking, and child abuse in a 9-county service area here in central Missouri. We are in a non-disclosed location for the safety of those that we work with, and we provide counseling services, emergency shelter services, case management, crisis intervention, hospital advocacy, and court advocacy to survivors throughout central Missouri. Last year, we served just over 1,300 survivors.
Wow.
Here in Missouri. We are on track to surpass that this year. And we provided almost 19,000 different services to those 1,300 survivors. Mm. And that's everything from accompanying them to court to counseling services, counseling sessions, having them stay within the shelter, providing a safe bed, meals, clothing, child care,
mm-hmm.
Working with survivors who are trying to pull their life together. Maybe they need to obtain vital records of some kind, social security cards, birth certificates, things like that.
Sure.
And we do that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Mm. Well, and you know, I think about when you talk about those records, it's often because of the situation in which you first encounter these clients.
That's right.
Could be in the middle of the night.
Oftentimes it is, yes.
And so kind of walk through how you end up meeting folks and then directing them to care.
Sure. So 99% of the time, our first contact with a survivor takes place through our hotline. We have a 24-hour hotline that is answered by trained victim advocates.
Okay.
Survivors, friends of survivors, concerned family members can call that number at any time, talk with an advocate about different options, what's happening, what have you. When a survivor contacts us who's looking for some sort of help, they'll do a short assessment over the phone, identifying mm-hmm. what it is that survivor is needing. Do they need to come into shelter? Are they in a safe space? Are they just looking for information? What have you. If they are in a situation that is dangerous, we will work with them to bring them into shelter.
Okay.
They and their children, their minor children. And they are able to stay with us as long as they need, as long as we have space available.
Okay.
Some survivors come and they stay with us a couple of days. They just need a brief period to kind of take a breath, figure out what their next step is,
mm-hmm.
move on from there. We have other survivors that come to us and they may be with us for up to a year.
Mm.
And during that year, they are working on everything from employment, getting their kiddos in school, identifying housing needs. Maybe sometimes in most cases, the mom is needing continuing education to be able to get a job or employment
mm-hmm.
where she can support herself and her kids. So we work with sister agencies throughout the communities to help get that job training or get that education so that they can get that employment so that they can live on their own and be self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Our biggest hurdle oftentimes to getting families out of shelter is housing.
Mm.
That has been a hurdle for years.
Sure.
And it continues to be so. Finding housing that the family is able to afford, finding housing that is something ideally in a community in which they feel safe and are able to live.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, most importantly, finding housing that is a safe place for them.
Yes.
And not just physical safety from the abuser, but also safety in terms of the environment of the housing unit.
So. I got you. So in your shelter, how many victims can you house?
So we actually only have 9 guest rooms within the shelter. In those guest rooms, we can either house 1 family, which would be a mom and children, or we can house 2 individual survivors.
Okay.
So the numbers kind of vary. It depends on how big a family might be or how many single survivors we have.
Yeah.
If we have male survivors that we're working with, they are able to obtain the exact same services that a female survivor can get. The only difference is we house them off-site.
Okay.
So typically we have different hotels or establishments that we work with where they can be safe there, but they still get the advocacy, the counseling, the case management, everything.
All right.
So depending on how many male survivors we're working with at the same time, that number varies. The most we've had in shelter in my almost 5-year tenure as executive director has been 27 people, including adults and children.
Yeah.
The fewest that we have had in shelter has been 14.
Wow. Okay. So when you look back over those 5 years, I mean, what if you were to talk about trend lines, what do you see?
You know, it's interesting because primarily what we see are families, parents with children that are fleeing abusive relationships. What we're seeing more of now is a lot of individuals that are ready to take that step to leave that relationship for good. In the past and in my past career, a lot of what we saw were people just looking for information, kind of that 2 or 3 day breather. And then, okay, I know more than I knew before, but I'm going to go back with the knowledge that I now have. I don't see that as much anymore.
Okay.
And so I would say that's probably a good thing.
Yes.
In terms of the education we're able to give to survivors, the help and the tools they're able to leave with. But the other thing that we are seeing a great deal of is our lack of capacity. Because we don't necessarily have a time limit, and because we are working so intensely with families, that causes our inability to house more families within shelter. So we have seen our numbers of people that we have had to either refer to other similar organizations to RACS, or we haven't been able to get them into shelter, so we've tried to find alternative safety. Maybe it's with a family member or a friend or something like that.
Yeah.
In 2024, we had to turn away more than 200 survivors that were seeking shelter. And that is a very hard thing to do.
Sure.
Now, just because they've been turned away from shelter doesn't mean they can't access our other services.
Right.
That is something we've worked very, very hard on, because there are many times when a survivor may not need shelter.
Right.
But they do need those additional supports like the counseling and the advocacy, et cetera. So we make sure they get that. If we can't get them in.
Yeah. Okay. So today we're chatting listeners on April 30th. Okay. So we're kind of dating ourselves here when you listen to this, but today's a bit of a special day internationally. The day has been dubbed Denim Day. So Angela, what's the significance and origin of Denim Day?
So Denim Day actually began internationally in 2000, but what led up to it was in 1992 in Rome, Italy. An 18-year-old young woman was raped by her 42-year-old driving instructor.
Okay.
The assailant was prosecuted in a court in Rome, found guilty, and sentenced.
Okay.
In 1999, he appealed his conviction, and a judge in Rome ruled that because the victim in that case had been wearing tight jeans at the time of her assault, she had to have assisted the defendant in removing her clothing for the sexual assault to happen, thereby implying consent to the sexual act.
Wow.
And this man's conviction was overturned as a result. A week after that conviction was overturned in the Italian parliament, every female member of parliament showed up wearing jeans. And thus Denim Day was born.
All right.
And the implication that a survivor of a rape or a sexual assault somehow consents to that violent act because of fear or threat or whatever may have occurred is absurd.
Yes.
And so Denim Day was born out of that, and it has become an international symbol for the need for absolute consent when it comes to a sexual act.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that absolute consent, you don't have consent.
Okay.
We often talk, particularly when we're talking about sexual assault and sexual violence, if you question whether or not there's consent in that situation, then you don't have it.
Okay.
And if you don't have it, that is a crime.
Okay.
And we need to make this very, very clear. Across the globe, this is not a Missouri issue. This is not a Central Missouri issue. This is not a United States issue. This is an international issue.
Right.
And when we are teaching our young people about dating, when we're talking about interpersonal relationships, sexual relationships, that is a conversation that must be had.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties, men and women, need to understand what consent is and what consent is not. Verbalizing the word no is an obvious non-consensual act.
Right.
But in many situations, particularly violent situations, a victim's not able to verbally express that.
Okay.
So in situations where, you know, you don't have that absolute, yes, I want to be a part of this act, or I want to engage in this act. Again, if you question it, you stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that consent.
Okay. All right. So I know you have, I'll call them preventative instruction or counseling for young people. What does that look like? What does consent look like?
So consent looks like yes. Consent looks like two consenting adults, and let's be clear, a minor cannot consent. So anyone under the age of 18 cannot consent.
Okay.
That's by law. So when you have two consenting adults engaging in intimate relationship or intimate behaviors, then that looks like verbally addressing one another, physically addressing one another, what have you. If you have one party in that situation who is hesitant, who is not engaged in the behavior, who is physically telling you no, maybe pulling themselves away or pushing the other party away or something like that, that's non-consensual.
Okay. Very good. So locally, RACS has organized a variety of efforts today tied with Denim Day.
Yeah.
So what do those efforts look like?
So we have a big social media push happening today to talk about Denim Day. And Denim Day is purely an awareness effort to get these conversations started. People don't like to talk about rape.
Yep.
People don't like to talk about victimization. Right. It gives you that ick
yep.
feeling.
Yeah.
These are not things to be ashamed of. These are not topics to be swept under the rug and ignored. Mm-hmm. So Denim Day is an opportunity to bring those conversations to light, to not only talk with survivors, but also talk with any adult about what consensual relationships look like.
Yeah.
Right? So again, we have a big social media push, getting the word out, just talking about it's okay to have these conversations. You know, when we talk about sexual assaults, it's one of the hardest crimes, and it is a crime, that prosecuting attorneys and law enforcement will tell you to prosecute.
Right.
Because oftentimes it's a he said, she said type of situation.
Right.
And not only with sexual assault crimes, but with interpersonal crimes, these types of criminal activities, we tend to victim blame. Mm-hmm. And the questions that we ask when we hear about a sexually motivated crime are pointed at the victim as opposed to the perpetrator.
Right. Right.
And we have to change that conversation.
Yeah.
Oftentimes you'll hear people say, well, why was, and I'll say she, because most victims are women, but people will say, well, why was she there?
Yeah.
Or what was she wearing? Or why did she lead him on? Or, you know, blah, 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 blah. First of all, doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. Second of all, if you're the victim of a robbery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I going to ask you, why do you have valuables in your home that could be stolen?
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
No.
Right? That is your property. That is your home. That is your safe space.
Right.
Same thing for your body. This is yours. You have the ability to say who can or cannot touch you, who can or cannot be intimate with you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to ask, what did you do?
Right.
It doesn't matter. So those are, again, conversations that we need to have both with men and women. This is, and it needs to start young.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with our daughters. We need to teach our daughters that it's okay to say no. Mm-hmm. I remember I grew up in an era where oh my gosh, she's so cute. Or, hey, go give Mr. Jones a hug. He's a sweet old man who lives next door. Well, as a four-year-old, maybe I'm a little weary of Mr. Jones, and yes, I don't want to give him a hug.
Right.
But I'm taught from a very early age that as a female, I'm supposed to ignore those feelings of insecurity or discomfort and let him hug me.
Yeah.
We need to stop training our daughters that way. We need to stop training our sons that they somehow have dominance over a relationship or other people simply because they're male.
Right.
And that's where that equality, if you would, comes in between the sexes. Mm-hmm. It's just as much of a right as I have to myself and to my body and my needs and my wants or not, so do you,
right,
as a male. So teaching our children it's okay to say no, to respect when our children say no, to listen to them. And then as they grow up in that environment with that empowerment, they will be safer. Not only will they be safer in this big, ugly world we have to eventually release them to, but they will also be making that world safer.
Right.
Because they'll be more likely to hear those things, recognize those things, and respect those things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to determine if this is, we'll be repeating what you have said, so.
Sometimes I get ahead of myself.
Sorry. Oh, no, you're doing great. You're doing great. So, beyond Denim Day, Rax is also supporting another event coming up here May 12th.
We are, yes.
That's in support of sexual and domestic violence survivors. So share some of the details as to what that is.
So on May 12th, we will be hosting our fourth annual Driving Out Domestic Violence Golf Tournament.
Okay.
This is one of two fundraising events that Rax hosts every year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, it will be at the Jefferson City Country Club.
Okay.
We are inviting anybody who wants a day out on the golf course to join us.
Exactly.
I don't care if you're good at golf or not. I am not, but I play anyway.
There you go.
And all of the money that is raised, whether it be through the teams that sign up or through sponsorship opportunities, is used to go back into the agency and used to provide the services and the supports that we have for survivors.
Okay.
Our goal is to raise $50,000.
Okay.
Don't know if we'll hit it or not, but that's our goal. It's a great day. The weather is supposed to be beautiful so far from what I'm seeing. A lot of people don't have the opportunity to play golf at the country club. So I invite you to come out, grab three of your friends. We will feed you lunch. We'll get you a golf cart. We'll set you free.
Okay.
We have prizes available for first, second, and third place. We even have a prize for dead last.
Oh, there we go.
Which is probably something that my team will shoot for. And, you know, different games and opportunities along the way.
Yeah.
It's just a fun event to get out, support the work that we do.
Okay.
And help us make a difference in the lives of survivors and within our community.
All right. So, and I assume if you want to participate, you can go to the RACS website.
That is exactly right. Our website is racsjc.org.
Okay.
And under the events tab, you just click the Driving Out Domestic Violence.
Mm-hmm.
You can register right there online.
Okay.
If you'd like to sponsor the event, if you have a business, and you want to be a part of it, we welcome that as well. We have a variety of different sponsorship levels that you can be a part of. And registration for sponsors and teams, that deadline is this Friday, May 2nd. And then that gives us time to get everything taken care of, make sure that all of our sponsors have their signage and all of our teams are registered and ready for a day on the course.
Okay. All right. So as we wrap up this conversation, what would you say to those who may have experienced sexual or domestic violence, as well as to the community that might want to help RACS in the mission to bring healing to those victims?
So first off, to victims, I would say you are not alone. It feels like you're alone. It feels like no one has ever experienced anything similar to what you have experienced. And although I will tell you that no one has experienced exactly what you have, you are not alone. There is support for you. There is help for you. And you do not have to heal by yourself. If you are looking for a shoulder to lean on, if you are looking for an empathetic ear, if you just want somebody to hear you, to be there for you, that is why RACS is here. We can support you in any way that you feel like you need it. It's up to you.
Hmm.
I won't tell you that you have to see a counselor. I won't tell you that you have to go to court. I won't tell you that you have to see a case manager. I will follow your lead and support you in the way that you feel safest and most supported.
Hmm.
You can start that by simply calling our hotline, and that number is 634-4911 or 1-800-303-0013. And talk with an advocate and know that that is solely why we exist, is to support you and to help you and to give you resources and make sure that you are able to heal and move on with your life.
Mm.
To people who appreciate the work that we do and want to help support the work that we do, there are a wide variety of different ways you can do that through your time, your talents, or your financial treasures. And all three of those are greatly appreciated. If you want to donate your time and volunteer for RACS, we have a wide variety of volunteer opportunities. Everything from coming in and reading stories to our kiddos who are in shelter, to being trained to be able to answer the hotline or serve as a crisis advocate. Mm-hmm. We can get you set up to do that. If you are interested in helping our board of directors and maybe serving on one of our committees, taking a more active role in the business aspect of RACS, mm-hmm. I welcome those business experts to come in and help us thrive and help us grow. Mm-hmm. If you would like to donate and help financially support the work that we do, you know, we've talked many times in the past about how funding is so important to nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And we don't sell anything.
Right.
We don't make anything. We provide a service. And we are very reliant on the generosity of this community here in Central Missouri. Mm-hmm. And because of the generosity of Central Missouri, we are able to make the grant dollars that we do receive go so much further. Mm-hmm. And if you want to help us do that, any financial contribution, whether it be $5 or $5,000, means more than you will know. Mm. I often tell people that so many times we don't know the impact that we have on another person. Mm-hmm. You meet somebody and something you say, or maybe it's a simple smile or holding the door open for somebody, you don't know the impact. But when you throw that pebble or you make that donation and you cause that ripple to happen, mm-hmm. it goes on and on and on. And the opportunities that we have to make an impact on our friends, our family, our neighbors, our community are endless.
Yeah.
And I invite you to be a part of the work that we're doing.
Angela, thank you so much for the service that you provide through RACS, as well as appearing with us here today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.